Well, on the radio, and that's why we like to talk about issues that you may not hear elsewhere in the broadcast world, mainstream media, or even read about in your local or favorite national newspaper, including the New York Times. And so we are going to talk about something that got my attention a couple weeks ago when I got an email from Scott Quaranda. He is head of the Dogwood Alliance and director of campaigns there, talking about a new video. It's a short video, 6 or 7 minutes, but pretty dramatic in terms of the pictures it shows. And since pictures don't translate so well over the radio, internet or otherwise, we're not going to play that. But hopefully Scott can tell us what the issues are and what brought about the production of this film, Our Forests Are Not Fuel, the film talking about the campaign that I guess is relatively recently launched. So thanks for being with us, Scott.
Absolutely, my pleasure.
Now, we know that they burn down or cut down trees in the rainforest for fuel, for lumber, for, you know, local subsistence and economies, and we know the problems in doing so. I hadn't heard that they were actually cutting down trees in wetlands. Is that actually what's happening, and is that in fact news? It seems to be. Wetlands, I thought, were, you know, certainly more protected, and I don't really think of trees in wetlands so much, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe there's a lot to learn here.
Yes, definitely. So the gist of it is that there's been a new move around the world. The biggest area right now that's interested is Europe, where they're looking to burn wood on a very large scale for electricity. And so all across the South, we're seeing more and more clear-cutting and destruction of endangered forest and forested wetlands to make wood pellets to ship over to Europe to burn. So our specific video looked at an area where wetlands in northeastern North Carolina and southeastern Virginia are being logged to make these pellets by a company called Enviva, who then ships them over to Europe for a number of large utilities in the UK and in the Netherlands to burn.
And why is this happening now? It seems like this is kind of an older method or you know, fairly low-tech technology.
Yeah, you would have think that this, you know, was something that the cavemen probably did, and for some reason now it's having a resurgence. The main reason why it's happening now is because what we're seeing is a push around the world for people to embrace renewable energy. So we're moving away from things like dirty coal-burning power plants to other technologies. And sadly, a number of companies are trying to skirt or countries are trying to skirt around doing things like embracing more wind and solar and building more of that out and focusing on national initiatives to conserve more energy and reduce overall energy use, and are embracing these so-called green technologies like burning wood for electricity. And it's just there's just some really bad, faulty assumptions around why you can burn a tree and have it be carbon neutral, because the reality is you cut down a tree, you release the carbon from the tree in logging, you release the carbon from the soil, there's all the energy that goes into processing and transporting it, and then when you burn the tree, there goes the carbon. So it was, you know, maybe a good thought and idea. We want to reduce our overall carbon footprint, but they chose the wrong way to do it.
And are they hearing from groups like Dogwood Alliance, those who are trying to expand this effort?
Yes. Our efforts have really been focused on basically three different levels. One is with the utility companies themselves, to engage with them and talk with them about why burning forests for electricity is not a good idea. And then we're also working on two policy fronts. One, like I said, the big market for this right now is Europe. So strangely enough, forests are being clear-cut all around the South to be shipped over to Europe. And so we're talking to the European Commission and individual national governments about why these policies need to change, why the policies that they've adopted are actually causing more carbon to be released in the atmosphere than less. And then thirdly, we're also working at a national level to make sure that the U.S. doesn't embrace this kind of technology as a renewable energy.
Hmm. And a separate but related campaign, as I understand it, is your Carbon Canopy effort, or is this all connected?
In a way, they're connected. It is a separate campaign, but so the basic idea and something that your listeners may not know is that 90% of the forests in the southern U.S. are privately owned. So basically what that means is the future of the forests in our region are in the hands of thousands of small private landowners. And because they're privately owned, they lack basically any legal protections. Private property rights are sacred in the South, so legislators across the region are unwilling to regulate what people do on private lands. So basically, as a landowner, landowners have all different kinds of ideas and thoughts about how they want to manage their land. Some don't want to manage it at all. Some just like to have a beautiful place and can afford to do that. Some want to, you know, farm some of it. Some want to save it and, you know, log it once every 60 years for the biggest trees to make money to send their kids to school or retire or whatever it is. But basically, the main way that's been pushed over the last 30 or 40 years has been to intensively manage their forests. So they're hearing from the paper industry and now the big utilities say, hey, we'll pay you all this money if you just clear cut it all. And what we realized is, because the decisions about the future of our forests in the southern U.S. are in the hands of all these private landowners, if we could find a way to basically pay private landowners to do two things, one, to conserve the best of what they have, and two, to manage those forests better, then we can ensure the future of our forests across the region. And so the carbon canopy actually gets the biggest companies who are buying products from our region, so companies like Staples and Home Depot who buy paper from our region or who buy solid wood products, to invest and buy the carbon that will be stored on the landscape through these better practices or through setting things aside. So we just recently announced the first two major buys in which some of the companies that I just named were involved in, where these companies bought carbon on the landscape over the next, basically to increase carbon on the landscape over the next 100 years as a way to invest in their supply chain. And what we see, how I see these two links, the carbon canopy and something like our forests, our fuels, is rather than clear-cutting our forests to burn for electricity for short-term gain, which is bad for the climate, we can instead invest in carbon on the landscape, increase carbon on the landscape, and actually protect and be good stewards for our forests across the region.
And has Coca-Cola joined the carbon canopy as one of your corporate partners?
Yes. Coca-Cola is also interested in investing in carbon on the landscape. In their case, it's to offset the paper packaging they use for soda cans, essentially. So Coca-Cola is part Home Depot, big paper company called Domtar, Columbia Forest Products that makes solid wood products, Interface Carpets, which some of your listeners may know. Ray Anderson was their visionary CEO.
Oh, yeah.
They're involved as well. So,
well, that doesn't surprise me that Interface is, having known and interviewed Ray Anderson for much of the last decade, and what a great loss it is since he passed. But Coca-Cola, that's a pretty big catch.
Yes, it's really exciting to see that. You know, these companies aren't wanting to just, you know, buy offsets to feel good about it. They're actually investing in the place where they're getting their products and making sure that those forests in the region where their products are coming from are actually going to be left in better shape than where they were to begin with. So it's exciting to see, you know, Fortune 500 companies voluntarily doing this, because, you know, as you know, the U.S. government chose not to pass any kind of carbon legislation, no cap and trade, no nothing. So these are all voluntary efforts by companies that want to do something positive rather than be forced into something that may be easily manipulated or not work so well or allow things in the system that aren't vigorous. Ours is a very vigorous system. It uses FSC management, which is the Forest Stewardship Council, Better Management in the Woods, and it uses the high standards of the California carbon market to measure, to ensure that more carbon is being captured on the landscape over the next 100 years.
Hmm. And Scott, last spring we spoke with, I'm not sure if it was you or someone else in the Dogwood Alliance, but about the effort to get International Paper to agree to some more responsible practices. What has happened with that in the last 6 to 9 months?
Oh, it's been great. Yeah, so you spoke to our executive director, Dana Smith, who really enjoyed her time on your show. But, you know, basically International Paper is the largest paper company in the world, and they're also the largest paper company in the South, which is, to throw around more large, the largest paper producing region in the world. So the decisions that International Paper makes every day around how they manage the woods and who they work with and how they do things has a huge impact on the landscape across the South. So 6 or 9 months ago, we actually announced an agreement with International Paper where they agreed to map endangered forests, to identify places where they were not going to buy wood from to make sure that those places were being protected, that they were going to work to end the conversion of natural forests to plantations, and they were going to actually invest in restoration across the landscape in the South. So since that time, we've actually seen them invest over $3 million into what's called NFWF, which is the National Forest. I could never remember what the acronym is, I'm sorry to say, but basically they do restoration. What's that?
That's okay. There's a lot of acronyms out there and hard to keep track of them all myself, I know.
Yeah.
But we get the gist, yeah.
Well, so what they've done is they've announced a multi-million dollar agreements in three different regions in the South, so the Mid-Atlantic Coast, the Cumberland Plateau, and the Piney Woods and the Ozarks, where they're actually spending money to restore landscapes that have been degraded over the last 50 years, mostly through paper production. So the company itself is, you know, putting its money where its mouth is and actually working to fix some of the destruction that's been wrought over the last few generations. So that's been a really good start. And then we've also seen the company look to integrate some of the efforts around how to map and identify those forests they're going to not source from, and how they're going to be able to ensure that they're not converting natural forests to plantations. So so far, so good in the process and the work. We're really pleased at where we're at right now and hope that this kind of model can apply to paper companies around the globe.
Hmm. And how important is it for groups like Dogwood Alliance to really be sort of the eyes and then mouthpiece for some of these areas that, you know, most of us will just never get to see and what's going on there? Because out of sight, out of mind is all too easy for many busy folks, Americans in particular, to subscribe to, whether they intend to or not. It just sort of happens. It's like the oceans. If we don't actually see what's going on under the surface, how would we know if it weren't for, you know, groups that are bringing it to our attention?
I really appreciate that question. That's a wonderful question, because I think, you know, what we strive for as an organization is to basically be able to fill that gap in the world. So I understand that people across this region care about the forests here, they care about the wildlife, they care about the natural beauty, the peace of mind that comes from enjoying it. And I realize that people around the country are also interested in seeing places like the South protected, but they don't necessarily have the time to do it. And they're not necessarily going to hear those communities that are being directly impacted by some of these worst practices or see what's happening to wildlife and special types of plants and animals that are being impacted. So it's a real honor for us to be able to help tell that story, to bring the voices of nature that can't necessarily speak itself, and some of these communities that are directly impacted that don't have a way to get out in front, that we can collect those things together to make sure that their voices are heard, and so that people everywhere across the South and really across the U.S. have an opportunity to see what's happening, to weigh in, to do something simple like donate or send an email to a decision maker, or just invest some of their time through volunteering into the work to make sure that our natural wonders and beauty across the region are protected and conserved.
Mm. And it looks like, at least from a photo on your website, which, by the way, is at dogwoodalliance.org, that you have maybe 24 employees, or maybe some of them are even volunteers. Maybe you have many more, they're just not pictured. You can address that perhaps. But thinking of, you know, a pretty scrappy but successful, you know, group of activists going up against the giants, Staples, McDonald's, Coca-Cola, KFC, Georgia Pacific, to name a few of the ones that you have influenced, just like, you know, Rainforest Action Network, probably you're going after the larger ones, the ones with the highest profile as far as corporations, so you can get others to follow suit. Does that, in fact, happen? Does that work that way when you get the big guys do you see maybe mid-size or even smaller companies that are, you know, resource extractive in nature following along, or not so much? Do you have to go one company by one company and lobby?
It's the former, not the latter. It's absolutely the case where we pick some of the biggest companies, the most well-known companies that have a major stake in the game, in order to influence them, in hopes that what that will do is influence people in their own sectors. So when you name Staples, for example, you know, we ran a campaign against Staples from 2002 to 2004. We got the first commitment from an office supply company out of them that did a lot of great things to change the kind of paper they were selling at their stores. And that influenced and helped us get policies then from Office Depot and Office Max. And we saw the same thing in the fast food industry, where we're working to get a policy from McDonald's. We were able to eventually help get Quiznos to adopt a policy, KFC and the Yum companies to adopt a policy. And ultimately, all those big customers who are buying all this paper, all these paper products from the biggest paper producers in our region, helped us convince Georgia-Pacific and International Paper and other paper companies in our region to change their practices, so that we've literally increased protection for millions of acres across the southern U.S., thanks to that strategy.
Mm. We are out of time, Scott, but speaking of small and scrappy, you might want to add the Green Front to your resources on your website. I know you've got sections for people to go to under Green News. We'd love to be right there, because we think what you guys are doing is terrific, and we like to keep shining the spotlight on the great works of folks like the Dogwood Alliance and all the activists out there who toil away for the greater good. And I think that's probably a good note to end the year on and the show on, and want to wish you, Scott, and the folks at your alliance and all our listeners out there and the folks back in the PRN studios a happy and green year ahead. Let's hope for more consciousness raising and roof raising in 2014. Lord knows we don't have a whole lot of time to waste.